Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This podcast explores what it means to make life less difficult for each other and for ourselves. We share stories of struggles and successes because we believe sharing our stories eases the difficulty of life. I'm Lisa Tilstra, your host. Let's jump into today's conversation. Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This is Lisa, and I'm going to be sharing with you just by myself today. I hope that you've had a chance to listen to some of my conversations with my guests. They have been amazing conversations. I feel so fortunate to be connecting with my guests, and we have more phenomenal conversations coming up. But today I thought I would take some time to share with you some thoughts and ideas and stories around conflict. So how many of you find conflict difficult? I am raising my hand, raising both hands. I definitely am someone who finds conflict difficult, even with new perspectives that I have learned and some of the perspectives that I will be sharing with you today, I still find conflict difficult. So I just want to share with you some of the things that I've learned because it has been helpful and it has made conflict somewhat less difficult for me. And so I want to share that. And by no means do I expect that through what I will share today, conflict will become easy for everyone. I wish I had that magic wand, because conflict is part of our lives. And spoiler alert, I don't think conflict in and of itself is good or bad. I think it is a reality of living life with others, being in relationship with others. And anytime we have a difference of opinion or desire or goals, there's conflict. And that can be very minor conflict or it can be very major conflict. But conflict in and of itself is I want to refer to it as a neutral reality of life and relationships. And what we do with it, how we are impacted by that conflict, can be positive or negative. It can really take a toll on us. So that is a spoiler alert of where I'm going. But before I jump into conflict more, I just want to say I am so excited to be releasing my podcast with its new artwork, which I have been working with my brilliant and talented niece, Emma Burdock, and I'm going to link her Instagram in the show notes. So please go and check out her other work. She has been patiently and resiliently working with me as we have developed this artwork, and I'm really thrilled to be releasing it. So check that out as well if you haven't had a chance to see my new podcast artwork. I'm really excited about it. So jumping into conflict, what comes to mind for you when you hear the word conflict? I put this question out on Facebook a few days ago and got some responses. So here are some of the things that come up for people when they hear the word conflict: war, arguments, fighting, bad, fear, avoid, problem, stress, space, avoidance, intractable, sadness, not being treated equally, discomfort, anxiety, quite a few anxieties, divisiveness, pain, distress, two different ideas trying to occupy the same space. That really is the heart of what conflict is. If we just want to define it simply, what is conflict? Two different ideas trying to occupy the same space. Which, I mean, when you hear it said like that, it's not that significant, right? But I'm getting ahead of myself. So more things that came to people's mind when they heard the word conflict: compassion, more stress, misunderstanding, being misunderstood, disharmony, anger, proceed with care. Resolution, distress, unhappiness, a scowl, my ex, someone shared. Someone else said someone's name who I will not share. This can happen. You might think of a particular person when you hear the word conflict, danger, conflict of interest. This one is really interesting. Both and versus either or. Come back to that. And opportunity to learn. Now, I have had the privilege of teaching classes on managing conflict over the past 9 or so years. And I have taught these classes all around the world at our various embassies and consulates around the world. And I've had people in my classes from all different countries and cultures. And when I ask this question, what comes to mind for you when you hear the word conflict? Regardless of the mix of nationalities and cultures represented in the room, the list is very similar to what I've just shared with you. There are some differences around the globe culturally with how conflict is perceived and dealt with, and there's commonalities. Some cultures are a little bit more comfortable engaging in conflict, being very direct with one another, and some cultures really pull back from conflict and say, no, we want to avoid at all costs. So what I want you to first of all start to do is just notice and be aware of your own responses and thoughts around conflict. There's no good or bad, right or wrong in how you respond or even think about conflict. Just notice and be curious about yourself, because there's lots of different reasons why we approach conflict the way we do. And I would put out here at the beginning, even if you say, I don't approach conflict, I avoid it. Well, that is also an approach to conflict. Avoidance is an actual legitimate approach to conflict, good news for you conflict avoiders. Sometimes avoiding conflict is actually the most effective approach. So again, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So think about what you learned about conflict growing up in your family of origin, in your culture, maybe through your education, through your work experience, and just be curious about yourself and this idea of conflict. And when we think about this idea of conflict simply being two different ideas trying to occupy the same space, and it could be more than two ideas, let's just start off at a baseline. There's a difference of opinions, a difference of ideas, a difference of perspectives that are existing in the same space. That doesn't sound terrible, right? Conflict doesn't immediately mean a fight and anger and all of the negative things that we often associate with it, okay? So we want to create a neutral space for conflict to be simply this place of different ideas trying to occupy the same space. Now, I grew up in a family where the response to conflict was mixed. My mom was and still is a conflict avoider. And it's interesting because we often refer to my mom as the peacemaker. And yet I, through this lens of conflict that I'm sharing with you, I think that there's a difference between avoiding conflict and being a peacemaker, which I did not always have a distinction on those two. So I just want to toss that out there. But my mom is the proclaimed peacemaker in my family and prefers to avoid conflict. My dad, he'll face conflict head on. He doesn't back down. He will get angry and everybody knows it, and he'll push for what he wants and he'll go for it, really go for it. So growing up in this environment with a mix between my parents' styles of responding to conflict, I kind of ended up a little mixed up with my own reactions And I've got a mix for myself, because sometimes I definitely avoid, and then sometimes I'm quite assertive and will really go for what I want, which can be a little confusing for those closest to me. But when I'm really, really transparent, I do tend to be on the avoid and accommodate side of conflict. So, and especially when others around me have strong feelings and opinions, I'm more likely to give in, to step back, versus really hold my ground and push for what I want. And sometimes this works really well, and sometimes it's not very effective, which really gets me to the heart of what I want to explore with you today. I've already mentioned this. I'll just say this again. Conflict in and of itself is not good or bad. The trick is really figuring out what type of conflict is present and what's the best response. And I'll even step away from that word of the best response and just say, what's the most effective response? Okay. And there's a structure that I want to talk about to help with this that was developed by these two guys, Kenneth Thomas and Ralph Killman. And they developed this model of understanding conflict and responding to conflict. And there's an assessment. You can go and you can take a questionnaire and you can answer all these questions about how you tend to respond in different situations. And you can see what your most natural and go-to response is to conflict. That can be really interesting to do. So I encourage you to do that. It's available online, and this is no association with me or my business. You can go online, you can search. I'll put a link in the website. It costs $45 to have access to this online assessment. And if you're interested, I highly recommend it. I think it's really interesting to take that questionnaire. And I'll share a little bit about what I learned about myself when I've taken that questionnaire in a few minutes. So Thomas and Killman look at conflict and say there are two main skills that we're using when we're engaged in conflict. And those two skills are, number one, assertiveness, and number two, cooperativeness. So assertiveness is looking at how firm are we being? How much are we stating our own position, our own opinion, our own idea, and how much are we standing firm for that? Cooperativeness is focusing on coordinating with others. What do others want? Focusing on what others want, prioritizing relationship more than the task at hand. And assertiveness is going to focus more on the task at hand than the relationships involved. And again, these skills are neutral. The two skills combined in varying amounts give us choices on how to react to and respond to change. And this is what really starts to open the door to me to see I have a choice of engaging in conflict in different ways. Yes, I have my natural go-to ways, and I have my sort of learned approach to conflict. And there's a skill to this idea of managing conflict and responding to conflict. And here are two skills that I can use in varying degrees that can allow me to adjust and alter the way I engage in conflicts. So with this structure, conflict has the potential to move from something negative, which I grew up being taught that it is more of a negative thing. There are some people that think conflict is really positive and they'll go for it every single time. And yet we can move away from that perception of negative or positive when it comes to conflict and just say it's a neutral reality. It's part of all of our lives and all of our relationships. And for all of you natural conflict avoiders, here's the great news. Avoiding conflict is actually the most effective response sometimes, according to Thomas and Killman and their model. And if there's someone listening who loves to compete and really loves to get in there and debate and push for your perspective and wants to win every single time, good news for you too, because sometimes the most effective way to respond to a conflict is by being really assertive and taking a competitive approach. So with this model, there's five ways to respond to conflict that are a different combination of assertiveness and cooperativeness. And these five responses to conflict are compete, avoid, accommodate, compromise, and collaborate. So let's explore how each of these involve various amounts of our two skills, the assertiveness and cooperativeness. The compete response to conflict means that I'm going to be really strong in my use of assertiveness. I'm going to have high use of assertiveness and actually very low concern about others, low use of cooperativeness. So when I look at these two skills, I'm saying, if I'm going to go into compete mode, high on assertiveness, low on cooperativeness. I care about what I want, and I'm willing to risk whatever you want. I'm willing to risk the relationship because what I want is most important. I'm willing to go for it. For avoid, and remember, this is a legitimate response. I know we talk about, I'm just a conflict avoider. But here, again, good news for conflict avoiders. Here is a legitimate, effective response to some conflict. Avoid. This means I'm going to be really low in assertiveness. And I'm also going to be low in cooperativeness. I'm just going to step back and be like, it doesn't matter. And I'm not going to engage because it just doesn't matter. Low in assertiveness, low in cooperativeness. Accommodating. If I'm going to accommodate in a conflict, that means I'm going to be low in my use of assertiveness, but I'm going to really be high in my use of cooperativeness. I'm going to be focused on what do you want and how is this impacting the relationship? So when I accommodate, it is with purpose of focusing on cooperativeness and focusing on the relationship. Again, accommodating can sometimes be perceived as a negative. Oh, you just accommodate for other people. And here's, again, good news if you are naturally an accommodator. This is a legitimate and effective approach to some conflicts. The third area of responding to conflict is compromise. And when I compromise, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a 50-50. I'm going to give a little bit. You're going to give a little bit. I'm going to use a moderate amount of assertiveness, and I'm going to use a moderate amount of cooperativeness. And we're going to see if we can do this and figure it out and each get a little bit of what we want and each give up a little bit, and we'll compromise. The fifth response is collaborate. And collaborate means I'm going to stand up for what I want. I'm going to be high in assertiveness, and I'm really going to care about what you want. I'm going to be high in cooperativeness. Both are important. And ideally, it ends where we both get what we want. You get what you want. I get what I want. And that sometimes is really hard to do. And sometimes it's worth doing the hard work to get there. Here's the key to all of this. And I think this is where it becomes very practical. Different conflicts call for different responses. So whatever your go-to approach is to conflict, it's perfect for some situations. And that's the good news. Chances are there's some other situations that could use a different approach. And this is where you might need to stretch yourself a little bit. Back to some good news, though. Remember, these are simply different combinations of two skills that we all have and we all use in different ways, assertiveness and cooperativeness. So sometimes we need to tune up our assertiveness. Sometimes we need to turn it down a little bit. Sometimes we need to really push to be more cooperative. Sometimes we need to actually pull back from that. Now, I will tell you, this can take practice. It does not come naturally for all of us to be able to flex in these five different, we sometimes call them conflict modes. It usually is a challenge. Two or three of them typically come pretty naturally for us. And two or three of them are going to be a stretch and push us a little bit. So for me, I am naturally more focused on the cooperativeness skill. So it is much easier for me to use and focus on being cooperative with others versus the assertiveness, standing up for what I want and pushing for what I want. And of course, that can vary in different circumstances and different situations, different relationships, but that is my go-to. And when I have taken the Thomas Gilman instrument, they call it the TKI, and that is the assessment, I have scored highest in the areas of avoiding and accommodating. I have scored zero in compete, meaning it is very rare that I will just turn up the assertiveness and ignore everybody else and really turn down the cooperativeness. And yet sometimes I need to do that. And so that's a growing edge for me. And it is also hard for me to get into that collaborative space where I have to be really assertive and really concerned about others and cooperative. So that's a tricky one. And again, each person is going to have a different go-to, but that is my go-to to really either avoid or accommodate, whatever you want. Yep. Sure. No problem. We'll go with what you want, even if I don't want that. Now, there are plenty of circumstances where that has no negative impact. So for example, my husband, John, has much stronger opinions about what we eat and if we're going out where we eat than I typically do. I occasionally will really feel like a certain type of food or a certain dish. And yet in general, I'm kind of like, I don't know, we just need to eat. And I know that after the meal, I won't be hungry anymore. So problem solved. We're good. And if you have a strong opinion, then let's go with what you want. Let's go where you want. Let's eat what you want. That's me accommodating. And I don't feel like I'm lacking anything. I'm not missing out because I'm not pushing for what I want and being really assertive. Again, occasionally I say, you know what? I really want Korean food. And I don't care if you want it or not, I want Korean. And that's what I'm going to push for, right? But that's the rare occasion for me. So if I don't have a strong opinion, if I don't have a strong stake in the outcome, it's a really nice opportunity for me to step into that space of accommodating and say, oh, you have a really strong opinion about this? Awesome. Let's go with what you want. And while I'm talking about this idea of accommodating, let me share with you some situations that it probably is the most effective response to a conflict. If I really want to show reasonableness in this relationship, if I want to give someone else the space to develop their decision-making or develop their assertiveness, develop their performance, I may, hey, I'm going to choose to accommodate here, give you the chance. If I want to create some goodwill in this relationship, if I want to keep the peace, this is the peacemaker approach, accommodate. If I know I'm retreating, so I might have engaged, I might have said, hey, I really want Italian tonight. And then John comes along and he's not feeling Italian at all. So I might retreat and say, hey, you know, I do actually really want Italian. However, I can see that you really don't want it. And in the end, I'm willing to back away from what I wanted and go with what you want. And also when I want to maintain perspective, this idea of accommodating could be the most effective response. So I think it's important to, again, keep in mind as we're talking about this, that there are certain situations where each one of these different approaches to conflict management are the most effective approach. And here's the other cool thing. If I know that there's places where accommodating would be the most effective response and I have a hard time doing that, there are actually skills that I can develop to help me become more efficient and effective at accommodating when it's the right thing to do. It can be a skill to learn to forego my own desires, to practice selflessness, to yield to someone else. And here's the other piece that is so important for every single one of these conflict modes. If I do it too much, I'm going to run into problems. If I do it too little, I'm probably going to run into problems. Okay. So if I am always accommodating, I'm going to start feeling resentment. I never get to choose where we go out to eat. It's always John. He always eat, right? If I always am accommodating, then I can start to feel resentment. And that's a sign that we might be accommodating too much. We might be accommodating by default rather than by design and by choice. And so pay attention to that. If you start to feel resentment because you're always giving in to the other, you might be using the accommodation style too much. You'll feel like your ideas and your opinions, your desires are overlooked. And other people might really feel, they may not know it, but there might be a loss because they're not getting your contributions. And your influence can be restricted if you're not using it, or if you're using it too much. Now, if you are not using accommodate enough, you are never giving in to other people and saying, fine, you get to decide today. There can be a lack of rapport with the individual or the individuals. It can create low morale on a team. You can get a reputation of, yeah, no, they'll never give in. They will just go with it. Don't even try. So pay attention to this in yourself and just be curious, notice about yourself. I want to share with you really briefly the other four modes of conflict styles, and share with you again briefly, there's great places to use these. There's places where it's going to be the most effective. There's some great skills that you can develop if you know this is an area that it would be good for you to develop in. And there's a caution. I like to say there's a ditch on both sides of the road. If you use it too little, too much, you can run into some problems. So I'm going to jump to the competing style of responding to conflict, where high in assertiveness, low in cooperativeness. If it is a situation where we need to take quick action, that might be the best response. If there needs to be an unpopular decision that is made, that might be the best response. We just need to be assertive. We need to go for it. And we can't worry about all these other things. If there's vital issues that need to be stood up for, if you're protecting yourself, it can be the most effective way to say, no, it's my way or the highway. Like, that's it. We're going for it. And there are certain situations where that is what's needed. If you need to go in that direction of being assertive and using that compete mode of conflict management, some of your skills include arguing and debating. I do not naturally have these skills. I'm truly working on developing them. Sometimes using rank, influence, position, especially in, say, a business setting where there's tough decisions that need to be made, really asserting your opinions and feelings. This can be hard for those of us who don't naturally assert ourselves, standing our ground, stating our position clearly. These are skills we can learn to develop that will help us when we need to actually compete. And that's going to be the best thing all around. Now, too much, it becomes aggressive. If someone's always competing, always asserting themselves, never cooperating, they're not going to get much feedback. there's not a place to learn for that person. You're not empowering people around you, and you might end up with a bunch of blind followers, and that all has its limitations. If you're not competing enough, which is where I fall on the side of the scale, my influence is restricted. I can be indecisive, delay my reactions and actions, and my contributions are withheld and not put out there. So it's really, this stuff is so interesting for me to think about, especially as a conflict avoider, a natural avoider and accommodator. I'm making myself credit for the accommodating too. So let's talk quick about avoiding, because this comes up for a lot of people. Conflict, avoid. Avoiding conflict might be the best response if it's an unimportant issue. Just leave it alone. Let somebody else deal with it. If you need to reduce tension in a relationship, let's just avoid this. If you need to buy some time, so maybe something comes up and you need to do some research. You're not quite sure actually what your stance is going to be or should be or needs to be. You can avoid temporarily, right? So this can be a temporary response to conflict, which is cool. And then you could move into maybe competing or compromising or accommodating, depending, go all different directions. If you know your limitations, you just say, look, I do not have the expertise to add my opinions, ideas to the situation. I'm going to avoid and leave it to the others. I can allow others ownership by just stepping back and saying, hey, you know what, you guys, it's on you. Just let me know what you decide. And sometimes there's issues that are more symptoms than actually the issue. And so by avoiding that, they might actually get resolved on their own. If you're someone who's listening to this, who really tends to be strong in the assertiveness side, this can be tough. These skills, it might be the skill of withdrawing, sidestepping, really practicing your sense of timing. Remember, just because you avoid for a certain amount of time doesn't mean you need to avoid it permanently. And the skill of leaving things unresolved. Again, it could be for a short period of time. It could be a longer period of time. Sometimes in our long-term relationships, there are issues that just are not resolvable. And a couple might choose to leave that unresolved. And you might hear that and you think, well, that's not good. And certainly there could be some red flags around that. And yet, I will just say briefly, there might be some times when everything else around it makes sense to do this, to just leave something unresolved. If both people can have peace of mind about that and not be simmering, because if we're simmering underneath and in the background, well, then that's not truly avoiding. There's other things going on. So again, notice that about yourself. Some things you might be able to just leave unresolved and let them be. Other things, if you're continuing to simmer inside and it's coming up for you and you're just kind of like choking on it, trying to, and then you blow up and explode, that's not healthy. So just take note of that. Too much or too little avoidance is going to create problems. So if I avoid everything, nobody's going to hear from me. Issues might become worse. I might really just, decisions around me might just be made by default and then I don't have any input. So there's certainly consequences to avoiding too much. And if not enough, there might be unnecessary hurt feelings, work overload, an inability to prioritize, an inability to delegate. So again, there's challenges on both sides of using it too much, too little. So let's talk for a moment now about compromise. This is 50-50. This is the let's make a deal. If we need to resolve issues that are moderate importance, if we need to reach a resolution with inequality between us, we both need to get some of this. We both need some commitment. Maybe it's a temporary solution. So maybe this isn't our final solution, but we've got to take action on something. And it's going to take a long time to get to a final resolution. So let's create a temporary compromise and then we'll go from there. And sometimes if we really go for something, if we're competing or collaborating and it doesn't work out, we might have to back it down to a compromising situation. And in compromising, some skills that are really important: negotiating, finding a middle ground, making concessions, really assessing the value. Do I keep pushing for this or do I just back off and say, okay, fine, let's make a deal. Too much, too little compromise. As much as compromise sounds like a great way to go 100% of the time, if we always do it, we might lose sight of the big picture. We might lose trust because sometimes people are relying on us and they really want us to go to bat for them and to push for something. And so if we don't, and we're always compromising, there can be a little bit of a cynical climate that can develop. If we use it not enough, then we end up having unnecessary confrontations. We might have unnecessary and frequent power struggles, the inability to negotiate, and we might be seen as unreasonable if we're not compromising enough. One more mode of conflict management, and that's collaborate. And remember, this is the one where we use high assertiveness and high cooperativeness. We are going for a win-win solution here. You get 100% of what you want. I get 100% of what I want. Do you even believe that's possible? I will admit that there are times where I'm like, it's just not possible. And here's the good news, because sometimes it's not possible. And this is part of developing the skill of analyzing situations and thinking about our response to conflict and saying, in this situation, collaboration, me getting everything I want, you getting everything you want, it's not possible. So what are we going to do? But sometimes it is possible. And sometimes two heads are better than one. So let's put our two heads together. Let's be assertive. Let's cooperate and let's see what we can do. If we need to integrate solutions and we really need to create new learning, we have to merge our perspectives. We have to gain commitment from everybody. And we really want to focus on keeping the relationships strong and healthy and solving problems. This could be the way to go. And this can take some serious skills. Listening, active listening, empathic listening, asking questions, seeking to understand before being understood, also speaking up, making sure you are understood, using empathy, having non-threatening confrontation, really looking for input analysis, identifying the underlying concerns. We have to get to the heart of the matter if we're really, truly going to collaborate successfully. And these are challenging relational skills. And again, it's both the relational focus, the cooperativeness, and we've got to solve this problem. And I'm going to be assertive of saying, this is what I want. This is what I need. This is my perspective. I'm going to stand by it. And I really care about you. And I really care about what you want. So how are we going to do this? Now, this can take time, which is why maybe sometimes we compromise first and then we commit to continuing to work towards a collaborative resolution. If we spend too much time here and there is the possibility that you're hearing this, you're like, wouldn't it be great if we could always collaborate? Wouldn't it be great if every situation was a win-win? On one hand, yes. And on the other hand, here's the good news. If you're thinking, I don't have time for that, you're right. You don't have time for that. And if we're always trying to collaborate and we're using collaboration too much, you can spend time on trivial matters where you don't need to have a win-win. People can perhaps take advantage of that and really push for things and stretch you in directions and ways that you don't need to be stretched and you don't need to spend your time there. And it can create a sense of work overload. So it's a good thing, and any good thing can be overused. If we don't use it enough, if we're never willing to put in the hard work and go there, we may miss out on potential mutual gains. There might be a lack of commitment from all parties involved. We're not really creating a sense of empowerment, and we really may lose innovation. Because when we commit to collaborating and saying we're going to continue to be assertive about this and continue to be cooperative about this, and we're going to push for it, it has the potential to really take us to some innovative places. It can be a wonderful tool. And again, there is no one best way to respond to and handle conflict. And to me, this is really good news. So if you have hung in there and continued listening to this and you're still listening to this now, first of all, thank you very much. I get really excited about this stuff, but I know it may not be everybody's jam, and that is okay. But if you are still listening, I would encourage you to think about yourself. You can do an informal assessment of yourself and think about, okay, well, what are the areas that are my natural go-to of responding to conflict? Am I an avoider? Am I a competitor? Am I an accommodator, a compromiser, or a collaborator? And remember, all of them are great. All of them are effective responses to conflict. And as we think of becoming more efficient and effective at responding to conflict, the more we can be flexible and adaptable and stretch ourselves into these different styles of responding to conflict, the more effective we can be in managing conflict and responding to the conflict that, again, remember, is just a neutral part of our lives and our relationships. So I'm going to include in the show notes some links so you can have more resources about the Thomas Kilman instrument. You'll see some graphics. Sometimes it's really helpful to see this visually. I'm a visual learner, and so it's one of the interesting things about the podcasting world. We are mostly relying on our auditory senses here. So I'll include in the show notes some resources so you can get some visual pictures and resources. And let me know what you think about this. If you have some extra time and some extra money, I think it's totally worth spending the $45 to take the assessment. Again, I have no connection at all to that. I make no money. I've got nothing associated with that. It's just, there's multiple platforms out there where you can purchase it and take that assessment right online. That can be interesting for you. And I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this? How is it helpful? What are the limitations that you see? And I think that's about it. So I've talked a lot today. I have shared again, I get super excited. This is a helpful framework for me to better understand conflict. For me, it has helped to take it out of that negative connotation that I really have kind of grown up with and have focused on, where conflict is bad, avoid conflict, and just say, hey, it's a reality. It's a neutral reality, and I've got some choices. And let me be thoughtful and accept that, hey, I've got some default responses to conflict, and I also have the capacity to develop these skills and to stretch myself into some other styles of managing conflict by choice, by design, and don't always have to rely on my default response. With that, thank you so much for listening, for joining me in the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. I truly hope that this information does indeed make your life and your management of conflict just a little less difficult. If you're like me, it certainly has not made it easy. It has, however, made it a little less difficult. So I would be grateful if you would take some time to subscribe to the podcast if you have not done so yet. And if you would be willing to leave a review, that would be really fantastic, and it helps other people find this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and good luck with managing your conflicts.